Welcome to the Sedona Soul Sister Show, down-to-earth discussions on spiritual, metaphysical, paranormal, and healing topics. The Sedona Soul Sisters are the most trusted psychic mediums in Sedona. They have offices in Sedona, Arizona, where they see clients from all over the world. And now, today's show. We are Rosalind Reynolds, who'll be popping in shortly, myself, Ivory Lanoue, Terry Ann Russell, Robert Markham, who's out today, Anya Sophia, and Michael, who are on the road today. We have offices in Sedona, Arizona, where we see clients from all over the world. Today's topic is healing through grief. If you have questions for us later, you're watching or listening to this later, and you have questions, you can email that to us or ask it in the comment section on the platform. We'll be happy to answer. And when you're live here with us, you know, you can just raise your hand and ask it live. I'll unmute you, or ask it in the chat room if you're shy. So Terry Ann, you asked for this topic, and there's a very clear reason why. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's very personal to me, and I'm very passionate about it because of my experience. After the loss of my son, probably about almost 2.5 years ago, I had no knowing about the physical aspects, the physical part of grief. Right. I've experienced the emotional loss of, you know, I've had grandparents pass and they were old. And I felt the emotion for that, but never the physical, how I felt it when my son passed. So I really, and because most of my business is directed to healing, it really drew me in to see how could I heal that physical part of me while healing that emotional and mental part of me as well. So it took me on a journey of these 2.5 years to really go through there, dig deep, and find out how do you heal through grief, right? Because there's so many misnomers about grief and how we should be doing it and how other people do it. And what I found is nobody goes through grief the same way.
Absolutely not. You know, I tell people when they, I figure part of what I do is intense grief counseling, and mediumship is probably the most deep grief counseling you can have, I think, because it allows people to reconnect with those they've lost, hope if they come through. But I know every time I think about this, you know, I certainly remember your ordeal, and not that you're through it by any means. You're certainly healed dramatically, but that day that you told us what happened with Aunt, like just that physical punch in the gut, and I just wanted to do something for you. And I was grieving right along with you, you know, but feeling your pain. And it was like a tidal wave.
Yeah, it was really, really difficult. I was not prepared. It was a sudden, you know, loss. It wasn't like he was sick. So we had no advance knowledge that he was going to pass. And just suddenly at 27, he got very sick and he passed from pancreatitis, which in early 20s is also very rare. And it was a similar condition to my daughter. It was like somebody ripped my heart out of my chest. You know, this child that I knew, this man now 27, that was my child, was no longer here. And so because we had such a close relationship, and because of all the work that I've done now in these past 2.5 years, it allowed me to go through that grieving process, having that support. I think the number one thing people should understand when you lose a loved one is having that support is so crucial. You know I had Anthony in spirit and I had the ability to connect with him, but I also had you guys on the ground, which made it very beneficial for me. I met wonderful, wonderful people through bereavement groups, others who lost children. And that community support really helped catapult me to having people who really understand it.
Absolutely. And, you know, sometimes it's very hard for people to reach out when they're in grief. It's very hard. They want to internalize it. They want to just kind of curl up into a ball. I think back to some deaths in my life. You know, I've had four people that I love dearly commit suicide. One was my first husband. We had been divorced and I remarried a year earlier and he committed suicide and it was devastating. You know, number one, he's the father of our child. And I had to tell her he had died and how he died and help her through the grieving as I was grieving because he was my first love. He was, you know, my first husband and Michelle's father. And that was really hard. And even though I was remarried and happily remarried, I grieved hard for 4 years. I was so deep in grief and it really shocked me. Looking at it like analytically, I just was like, this isn't even your current husband or boyfriend. You know, that was a good lesson for me that you can't put confines on it. You can't put a definition of you're allowed to grieve when this happens. You're allowed to grieve when this happens. And then before that and after that, you know, three other friends who committed suicide and for, you know, various times in my life, that's just all been so hard. You know, losing somebody that way is one of the hardest ways because they choose to leave, you know, and so mm-hmm. you've got that to deal with as well. But yeah, I've had to work on myself really hard through thought field therapy to separate emotionally from so much pain. So I don't just walk around this open wound.
Yeah, that's really understandable. I know you use that with my mom, and I think it's a wonderful modality to use. For me, it was energy healing. You know, I felt it's so hard to even put into words. I felt like somebody ripped my heart out of my chest. It was horrible, but I had so much pain in my chest, my lungs. I felt like somebody was actually sitting on me, compressing my chest, so I couldn't breathe. And it's funny because when I went to my masseuse, I actually, from the crying and screaming, had a rib out of place and he had to pop that rib back in. So the energy healing helped sort of to alleviate some of that, right? I was able to pull some of that energy was so heavy in my chest and I was able to breathe easier. It just gave me the ability to move that pain. Because as I said, I wasn't prepared for the physical aspect of it.
Yeah. I think, you know, you always think back to the first time you deal with grief. The first time for a lot of people, it's when a grandparent passes away and it hurts. You know, I adored my maternal grandmother and when she passed, it was hard, but she also had Alzheimer's and she had to be put in an Alzheimer's unit for several years prior to her death. So it wasn't good quality of life and that helped. And she was in her 90s and that helps. But it seems like, you know, the younger a person it is, and I think when it's your own child, I would imagine that's the worst pain that there is. And I'm so sorry for you and anyone who's gone through it. And I talked to so many people who've lost children, whether they're young or adults, it doesn't matter. It's your child.
And we all grieve differently. I found my entire family has grieved so differently. And similar to you, I also felt that I had to help everybody in my family while I was going through this process, right? Which wasn't healthy for me because I couldn't help myself. How was I supposed to help my other children, my parents? You know, so I was like sort of caught in that in-between place.
Robert, did you want to say something?
I did. This is such an incredible topic with your folks' experience. And I wanted to bring this up that like grieving the loss of an individual, but I think that this is such a complex, it's such a complex, you know, part of the human experience that it even goes into experiences of betrayal. Like, I think if I feel betrayed by somebody, it's like I'm grieving the idea of who I thought they were. Or even if I lose somebody that's a loved one, I'm grieving the loss of my expectations for what the future was. And I think this can easily become interpreted as an insensitive thing to say, but it's like asking, what am I holding on to? And what am I holding on to that is no longer there, that this person is not there, or that my idea of them is not there anymore either? But I think it's also one of the healthiest ways to look at it, because it'll allow for the intention of accessing whatever it is causing these emotions. And one interesting thing there is what I've learned in my novice youth even is, you know, it's not whether I look at grief as the processing of emotions. And I think like, so it could be, I didn't get the job I wanted. There's a grieving process there. And perhaps in the best of cases, as a human, it gets to the point where nothing sticks to you. So grief doesn't really become a part of your life. I can't speak as it's so complicated, right? Like I'll never know what it's like to experience giving a mother's love, right? So I can't speak on things like that. But perhaps in the best cases, we seek spiritual and mental health or maturity. It's like the little things don't stick as much. Like you don't feel the need to grieve the little things. Like I didn't get this job, right? Like, so you don't grieve it because you're like, hey, it's all meant to be, right? And it's like, but when you're going through the throes of losing someone you really love, it's very, very difficult to say, oh, it's all meant to be. It's like, yeah, that's cool, but I've got to process this. Like, I'm a human. I've got to process this. And so I just think, you know, I picture like the enlightened guru, and it's like, I don't care who they are. As long as they're in this body and they feel that love for somebody, you know, I think it's not if you're going to process something, it's that, you know, you're going to have to process these emotions. And so me as being a friend or anybody involved in a grieving process at all, I just think, okay, they're going to have to process this. It's like, whether it happens now or a month from now, is I had it explained to me like waves hitting the shore. You know, you get slammed with a wave and it's like, okay, we know the waves are coming. What do we do when they come? And it's like, for me, and I think we'll all agree with this. It's like, you have to sit with it. You have to face it. You have to love it. You have to love the emotion, no matter how gnarly it looks. And no matter how gnarly the wave is, you know, it's like, you gotta do that. And then what I've learned is like, okay, there's good news. The grief is going to pass, right? The waves might not stop, right? But like my ability to endure this goes away as I process it. So my key thing is two things on my statement here is that, you know, I feel like grief encompasses so many experiences, right? Getting in a car wreck. What are you doing? You're grieving the fact that this happened. It's like, well, what does that mean? It means I'm processing. I have to process it. And the problem with this, or the encumbrance with this, is that as I process these emotions related to this car wreck, other emotions come up that are related to this. And it's like, this is life. This is your opportunity to face those two so that the next time you go around, it's not as hard. And so it's really interesting my last statement here is that, you know, there's aspects of life that I've never experienced. I never will, like being a mother, and grief is in that. And then the child leaving the nest, right? The mother grieving that. I will not know what that is like, but there's grief also encompasses all these other things that are very accessible for everybody to learn how to ride that way better. And it's a technique of letting go and processing, perhaps. All right, I'll lower my hand. Thank you guys for all that radio time.
I'm really glad you brought that up, Robert, because when we were talking about this topic last week, I thought, you know, we really do need to bring up the fact that grief is not just about grieving the death of someone. Some other circumstances that are pretty common for grief would be the end of a relationship, particularly the longer you've been together, you're grieving what you thought your mutual future with them was going to be. And that's a big one. Another one would be serious health issues. I've been dealing with that to a degree. I can't do medical Qigong energy healing anymore because I have a back issue. I grieve that. That's an important thing. Like what started my spiritual journey. But there's many people with worse situations than that. Let's say you get in an accident and you can't walk anymore. You're grieving your loss of mobility, the big change to your lifestyle, what you can't do anymore. But something else you said, Robert, that's super important, and I want to emphasize this, is working in the field of mental health, something I learned early on in my training, and I took it to heart. You cannot heal unless you walk through the pain. And that means you have to let yourself feel it fully. You have to give yourself time to go through it and feel all the pain. And when you can't take it anymore, then you're ready to do something about it. Let's stop the pain. And for me, what's helped people the most for stopping the pain has been to separate themselves emotionally from the traumatic incident, whether it's a death, divorce, whatever it is, abuse, to separate emotionally so you can think about it, talk about it, or write about it and feel nothing. And that allows you to then really work on yourself without emotions continuously popping up and getting in the way of your healing. And Roz, I'm so glad you're here with us.
Yay. I clicked on every possible thing that was ever listed and it finally worked. Something worked.
Sometimes I know that feeling. It's just like that. I knew you'd be here eventually.
I didn't, but I'm glad you have faith in me.
So, Terri-Ann, what would you say helped you the most? It's something we haven't talked about yet that really helped you, especially in those early days.
Well, I found out that I don't really breathe. When you're grieving so hard, you do not breathe. You hold everything in. And so deep breathing, what really helped me besides energy healing was deep breathing and yoga. You know, doing certain poses in yoga, and I found a guy that does grief yoga. And so we process grief through yoga. And that was so enlightening for me because it taught me to really breathe through that process. And we don't breathe enough in general. So deep breathing, right? I'm able to go through that process. It raises my frequency. It helps me to get oxygen through my blood and my veins and my bones. So those two things were also very beneficial, stretching and moving, you know, because like I said, I had that rib that popped out, you know, so doing those sorts of things all together. I think for me, it was a combination. And some people aren't ready to do anything, you know, and that's okay too. What I've learned is it's a process and everybody's process is individual. But before I end, I just want to say, I want to add to yours, and it's turning that pain into something beautiful. You know, I believe, it's my belief that my son and I had this contract and I was supposed to go through this to give me the opportunity to help other people. And by turning my pain into this beauty, not only do I honor my son, but I honor myself, my soul, what my soul came here to do. So turning that pain into something that can be beautiful by helping others with that.
100%. 100%. You know, and it helps so much that Anthony is so frequently in contact with you, comes to you in dream visitations every month. I mean, it just goes on and on, giving you signs pretty much every day really helps too. But you have to get past the human emotions. No matter how spiritual you are, you have to honor the human side of yourself, as Robert was saying. I wanted to just say the other two things that deep breathing do that will really help you get a grip on grief is it balances you and it centers you. Now, when I started working at the psychiatric hospital early in my mental health career, my job, when there was a code green, which means somebody's getting violent, they have to be restrained, my job was to talk to them, to calm them down. So I learned how to do that really well. But I also learned if you get that person to take 10 long, deep breaths in through the nose, hold it a couple seconds and let it out in a long, slow breath through the mouth, it forces the body and the mind to calm down. And I've used that in my personal life, in my work life here over and over and over again, just to help people get to a calm place where they can talk. That's all I wanted to say. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, I tie into all of that by saying, so what is yoga doing? It's like, in my opinion, it's relaxing you. And so it's finding this place of relaxation. And it's like whoever's instructing your yoga is saying, hey, just follow me and do this. And then in time, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm relaxed. And it makes me think that like grieving and processing grief, paradoxically, you're not doing anything. It's the opposite. You're surrendering, in my opinion. And so if you're not doing anything and grieving is about surrendering, it's like, well, then like what you said, Terri-Ann, like perhaps getting into a state of relaxation allows one to grieve. So it allows one to do that which you cannot do. That's sort of stupid or silly there. But and that is so beautiful. You talk about, you know, how, because I think we talked about inspiration before, you know, and Tarianne, you say, like, I think when others, when we're so constantly inspired by everything around us all the time, and expired, that's the word too. And others see your strength and they can see that you conquered your fears, then they believe they can do it too. And it's incredible to become that. So it's so easy to salute you and everybody else on this call doing similar things, including myself, in my own context. Here's this, this quick little story. Recently I stayed at this house, and, there's a recently widowed woman, in her 60s, and she had a loving marriage with this man. I mean, just nothing but great things to say. This man was beloved. He seems like he was a special person, and he was her special person too. And I stayed in his room, and I was a little iffy about that, you know, but I stayed in there. And then I had this night where I was working on myself energetically. I went deep into some emotions. It was around Christmas time. They came up. I put my hat on. I said, it's time to go to work. Let's do this. And so I just did what I do on myself for about an hour and a half. And then there was this weird moment where I felt this energy come in. And then the visualization of it was Gordon. Oh, I didn't mean to say his name. Was this man. And I'm laying in bed because I like to be very comfortable in doing this, relaxed, all about that relaxation. And he comes up and he just places his hand on my shoulder. Like, so encouraging to this kind of older, more mature person, to this younger fella, sort of a moment like that, like, hey, good job. You're doing a great job, man. You know, kind of one of those moments. It was really beautiful. It was a treasure. And, because of her openness to these things, I shared the story with her, and she said, that is exactly what he used to do. Is he would do that. He would place his hand on your shoulder. That was his thing. And I was like, oh my gosh. I said, I'm pretty in tune with some of this stuff. And I think this happened. And she's like, I know it happened. And she was so overjoyed by it. I think it actually helped her, you know, helped her in her grieving. And I thought I just wanted to share that story, because you mentioned visitation in your dream, Tarianne, and it just makes me think that we're only grieving an aspect of the loss. There's a deeper dimension here that cannot be obliterated by the form, you know. And we do have access to that, and perhaps we gain greater access as we have more courage to process the grief. That's all I wanted to say.
That's a really beautiful story, Robert, and it brings up a point I wanted to say about mediumship in general. Like, I think what's so beautiful about mediumship is that people get peace, people get closure, and it can be, even if what they're hoping happens doesn't happen, feeling the touch of their loved one, hearing anything you can say that they know is connected to that spirit, it just, you can see it in their face, you can feel it in their energy, their frequency. And they leave with a little bit of a glow, and their sadness lifts. And it's a beautiful thing. It's what keeps me doing it, is what it does for other people. You know, I always liked helping people through grief and in therapy type work, counseling work, but this is more profound. And I know Tarianne and Roz, you do this work as well. So I know you know what I'm talking about, that change that comes over people when they have an experience like that, especially if they never have before. True. Tarianne, do you want to talk about your experience with Anthony with your book?
Oh, yeah. So there's healing through grief and there's healing with words, right? When I wrote my book, I started writing that book at 4 months after he passed, and at his insistent urging to write that book. I did not want to write that book. I'm not a writer. My son had a degree in journalism and communications. And so every day he would be on me, and Roz and I used to laugh, and you too, how he would talk to me every day, like, write that book. And I'm like, no, I can't write a book. You're crazy. So at 4 months, I started writing. And what I found was it became very cathartic for me. I was able to release a lot. And because I was channeling my son, he would enter my body. He would help me raise my frequency. He would spend so much time with me while I was writing this book. And so my book is very raw. It's very emotional. You can feel it. And I think what's the most beautiful to me is a lot of people who've read this book have had communication with my son. So he's able, through the words, to reach the people that are reading it. The editor who edited my book called me up and he would say, I think Anthony's here. I think he's talking to me. Is this possible? And so, yeah. And people that weren't spiritually open, you know, having experiences, hearing, seeing, feeling my son, having him visit them in their dreams, his friends, his family. So the word is also very powerful. That transmission of his words through me was able to show other people, gave them hope, and it gave them the ability to connect with him, showing them that love never dies. There is no death. Your loved one is still here. You know, you may not be able to see, feel, hear them, but they can hear you. So they can connect with you. And when you rise up out of your grief and you raise your frequency, you know, grief can be so consuming, but when you can get into that spot where you can raise up, you can really have this beautiful experience.
100%. As you're talking about that, I'm thinking I have to say this, you know, there's nobody left who's going to be offended by this or disagree, but this husband, my first husband who passed away a long time ago, he was a very abusive person to myself and our daughter. And it was a painful experience to be in a relationship with him. And I feared him. So after he passed, he started coming through almost immediately. And interestingly, Robert, I would be sitting on the sofa in my living room and I would feel a hand on my right shoulder. And it would be from behind because I could feel fingers in the front. And I would see him and feel his presence. And he would just send so much love and healing into me. And then every time that I came across a medium, or I was with someone who was getting a mediumship reading, or even just hanging out with a medium, they'd be like, there's a guy here, his name's Danny or David. And he keeps saying, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. Tell our daughter, I'm sorry. Tell my mom, I'm sorry. And those two things were really healing because I felt like once he crossed and he'd been crossed for a few days, he started being there for me in a way he was never in except early in the relationship. He was there for me to support me and help me and encourage me. And I felt love from him. And he kept letting me know he was watching and he was helping and he was, you know, trying to make up for it. And that continues. I mean, that still happened last year and he died in 95. So we're talking a long time ago. So I really got a lot of healing from that because it started changing how I think about him. And I realized that, you know, yeah, he was pretty raw to be around in this lifetime, but he managed to transform on the other side. And he's not that person. And I could let go of a lot of the abuse and the pain and the trauma. And it helped my daughter too. She didn't really want to hear some of those messages of I'm sorry, but I could tell, like I know her so well that I could tell it touched her very deeply. And every message that comes through for her helps her a little bit more. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of ways that you can find that your help that you might not have thought of. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, I was kind of questioning whether I wanted to bring this up, but it's the idea of how regret could be associated with grief, or even guilt too, right? All the emotions come up, right? It's like a roller coaster. And then I thought about what if you kind of know somebody's going to pass, right? Like for anyone who doesn't know, I had the privilege of serving as a primary caregiver for the final 6 weeks of a woman close to me who had terminal metastatic breast cancer. And I kind of saw this thing to the end, if you will. And it was a incredible experience because experiencing grief before they're dead, before whatever event we're expecting to happen happens. And I took this opportunity to study it. I was going through everything also, but I was like, I'm not going to waste this to figure out, like, how do you do this right? And what I ended up settling on was just trying to be as like loving and forgiving as possible, you know, through that process. Because for me, what it ended up to myself too, because as you get gnawed to the bone by these intense emotional pressure experiences, like, you know, you have someone close to you that's going through something tough or whatnot, is the pressure can mount and you can maybe behave in ways you don't want to. And, you know, maybe you have someone who's sick and you snapped at them, and maybe they're in great pain and you snapped at them. And then you have guilt about that and things like that. And it's like overcoming this. And perhaps you guys have some pointers to add to this, but for me, it was like thinking of it through a mind of, I've been, what's the right word here? I've been trusted with this experience almost. And my task is to learn how to serve humbly and lovingly. And I believe that the benefit of this mindset is that you don't quite have as much regret when you're keeping that intention. And I saw when other people around, say this particular instance, other people around this person that were in intense grief, and she and I, we kind of had transcended it in a way. It was this weird situation because of this loving service interaction. And what I would study them too, and I'd say, why are they, you know, they saw this coming, you know, why is this so intense right now? What is grief? What's going on here? And quite frankly, I feel like a lot of it was regret. And I think I could sense this fear of unfinished business. And then I start to think, well, how do you not have that? And so on and so forth. And I think it does actually end up boiling down to the absence of forgiveness at one point or the other. And what the individuals are craving most is that safe harbor of, I forgive you and you forgive me. And it was like there were barriers to them getting to that with her because it takes time to work through those things. And so maybe my message here is that it's like some ways to maybe get insurance against grief being worse than it has to be is like taking steps to maybe work on achieving a forgiving state with individuals close to you earlier rather than later, because there could come a time where it's kind of too late. They don't have the energy to do it, or it just happens too quickly. That was kind of mumbo jumboed, but maybe there was an essence in there somewhere.
Yeah. I don't think it's as mumbo jumboed as you think. I think that's great points. And one of the things, first off, that's a very intense thing to go through. So you do know deep grief. You do know how that is. And it brings up a point I'd like to make, is that a lot of times when people are grieving, they'll say, I don't have the right to grieve that hard because Terri Ann lost her son. You know, this is just my friend. It doesn't work like that. You have to give yourself the kindness and love to say, it hurts. I lost somebody I love. And don't like everything else in life, don't compare yourself to other people, because it doesn't matter. It's how you feel. It's what you're going through. And you lost somebody you care about or you love. And you're torn apart in this moment. And let yourself be. Give yourself the honor of allowing yourself to grieve. You deserve to grieve. And I don't even care if it's somebody you knew briefly, but touched you in some way. It doesn't matter. If you're grieving, you're grieving. That's all I wanted to say.
And I think you go through all the emotions, right? You go through pain, you go through fear. I mean, grief is not linear. It's not the same for everybody. Everybody does it at different levels. Some people do it by having the opposite reaction, and they, like my oldest son, threw himself into work That was the way that he grieved, the way that he dealt with the loss of his brother. So he would work a lot. You know what I mean? So everybody is so uniquely different that you can't even put a finger on it, how you think somebody's going to grieve or how somebody's going to grieve.
100%. I just want to say, like, I worked in mental health at the time that first my daughter made a serious suicide attempt. She actually did it twice in 12 hours, but it wasn't her time. And the hospital's like, clearly, you know, this girl's blessed. 3 months later, her father killed himself. So there was, I was still traumatized by her suicide attempt. Then her father committed suicide. And my first thought was, oh my God, what's that going to do to her? Is she going to attempt again and this time be successful? So I was terrified about that. But the point being, I thought because I was a mental health, you know, person who worked in the field of mental health, that I would be able to handle this like handling it for other people, helping other people through it. No. Let me just tell you that right now. I remember the first thing I did was when his mother called me and I kind of collapsed and almost fainted because I was thinking immediately of our daughter. And I grabbed a sponge and I was furiously like cleaning the kitchen. And my husband at the time came over and he like takes the sponge out of my hand and he walks me and he goes, you need to sit down and talk to Michelle. You know, you got to talk to her. I didn't even want to tell her what had happened, you know, but I was just trying to frantically deal with it in some weird way. So then I went into the bedroom actually, and I had a little breakdown. I called the emergency mental health line that I worked on, you know, that I took turns handling calls there. And they're like, oh my God, you're an employee here. And they put me through to the executive director of the psychiatric hospital. He called me. And he's the one who calmed me down. He had been through something really traumatic and he knew, like, he'd been in the field 40 years and he knows it doesn't matter. You know, when it's your personal life, you're going to fall apart. And it was really an eye opener for me of how a person who's pretty darn together can fall apart in a heartbeat. And you do need the people around you to like, go in and talk. You need to talk to Michelle. You need to tell her, you need to hold her, you know, hug her. And after that, I was fine. It was just like my immediate response to it. But anyway, that was rough. Yes, Robert. Do you want to say something, Robert?
I think he's on mute.
Oh, did you mute yourself? Here we go. Yeah, he muted himself. There we go. Yeah,
sorry about that.
What do you want to say? Well, it's sounding really robotic. Roz, I'm going to turn off your video momentarily, just for a moment. Say that again, Robert.
Weird.
Nope, that's not working. Sorry, it's coming through super robotic.
Can you guys hear?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Whoops. Now, are you there? Go ahead and say what you want to say. It's fine. Most people are listening to this on a podcast platform.
Okay. I think my phone got too hot. So I had a friend tell me, hey, I have a friend that is about to get engaged, let's say early 30s, very early, let's say 31, 32. They've got this life planned out. And then all of a sudden they learn that, my friend's friend learns that her fiance has been diagnosed with some sort of cancer, and not something trivial, let's say. And my friend is saying, I don't know how to help her through this. Like, I don't know what to say or any of this. And then I just had this inspiration and it was so beautiful. And I said, you know, call this person, Ashley. I said, Ashley, when we go through very, very, very tough times, what we crave, something that is very hard to find, and that is to be understood, someone to understand the depth of my suffering. And we'll tell people stories of what's going on. And it's just this, sometimes this feeling that they just can't understand. If you haven't lost a child, you don't know what it is like to lose a child. It's that simple. However, there are some people that have experienced great grief and they do understand the essence of grief and they can help you, right? But say in this instance, Ashley's like friend is going through this really crazy thing that is just upending her life in every way. And Ashley doesn't know what to do to be there for her because she just doesn't understand. She's never experienced something like that. However, her friend is wanting her to be there for her because they're such close friends. And it's like, oh my gosh, like, how do I help her? And then you get frustrated. Ashley would get frustrated at herself for not knowing what to say to make the suffering easier. And I said, okay, first accept that, just go off the assumption that you don't understand. It's a good place to start from, because if you start from there, you will not seek to control your friend's emotions. You will seek to understand her emotions. And if you can be a wise person seeking to understand the depth of someone else, you will be a great friend. You will be a great friend. You will not seek to control. You will seek to understand. And as you seek to understand her and you do it skillfully, she will be able to understand herself better through this process. And so how do you do that? I said, just be there, be available, right? When someone is in the emotions of deep, deep grief, logic doesn't work. throw the logic out. What that person needs is love. What that person needs is love. And love is there. Love does not seek to control. Love gives. And I said, you're not going to be able to understand, so stop trying. Just come from a place of, I am here. How can I help? And keep your ears open. Act like this is an experience for you to learn from her. And I just wanted to state that because those things have worked very well for me. And I wanted to share that with the audience because I think there's really something there.
That's really powerful, Robert. And I want to kind of piggyback on that and say, over the years when people would say, oh, I lost my husband and all my friends just went poof and my relatives really weren't there for me. And I know I have to tell them, you know, what happened there is they don't know what to say. They have no idea what to say. And so when people try to say things, they'll say, I understand how you feel. I know how you feel. No, you don't. Even if you had the same situation in your life, you don't know how that person feels. So I totally agree with that. Two things you can do, and this is coming from a whole lot of surveys of people who've lost a loved one. The things they would appreciate most is somebody listening and somebody hugging them. Those two things. You don't have to say a word. You don't need to say anything. It's not up to you to fix it or heal it. But like Robert says, just be there and love them and care about them. Give them your energy, your love, and listen when they need to talk. And that's really profound for them. So I think that's good. We try too hard, don't we?
As a rule. Try to fix it. We always try to fix it, right?
Mm-hmm. Can't fix that. Not by a long shot. Is there any last thing you wanted to say, Terri-Anne, about this?
I would just say that we really have to sort of flip the script of how people deal with grief. We can't any longer squash it down and pretend it doesn't exist, because it exists in a lot of areas in our life. And, you know, we have got to learn going forward how to heal things. We've got to face them head on. We've got to do our work, and we've got to put the time in to make sure that while we're here doing our work, right, our soul's purpose is to learn, grow, and evolve.
I want to say one quick thing. If you're an empath and you're going through grief, it's going to be exceptionally hard for you. And for me as an empath, one thing I've discovered is it's not a good idea for me to go to funerals and memorial services, because then I start picking up the sadness from everybody else. And I've worked on myself to get to the point where I can go there and be pretty balanced. And then I feel this tidal wave of grief hitting me in the solar plexus. And so if you have to go, if you feel like you really must go, wrap yourself in protection, you know, put your hand over your solar plexus and keep it there. Put those bubbles of protection around yourself, because it's going to be difficult. Go ahead, Robert.
This came and I need to slide it in here. One thing I noticed too, people going through a tough time, maybe they're grieving, et cetera. they become a magnet of words like, oh, I'm so sorry, which is essentially can be translated to, things aren't what they should be, and I feel bad for you because you're not good enough, you know, things like that. And I was just like, man, like, how can I add to this situation to like try to balance this out? And it's like, I think it's a little like, if I'm grieving, having somebody around me that's not considerate of my grief is one thing. That can be annoying, if you will. But having someone around me that refuses to acknowledge this sense of lack, they see in me what they want me to be. And they respond to me and behave towards me in the light of my best self, in the light of the opposite of this grief, right? It's like they inject energy into me. When someone comes and they say they have sympathy, right? They're just like, it's like they don't mean to do it. It's just, it's where they're at. But, you know, I think like when I was helping this friend of mine, I would think like, okay, when I go into this room, joy, loving joy, this person does not need doesn't need an acknowledgement of how crappy their situation is. They need love. Right. And love doesn't acknowledge, oh, it's so crappy. You know, love looks beyond that. It shifts reality. And so I just wanted to share that too. Like coming from a place of like, I'm not going to like sympathy doesn't really help. I think a lot of times it's instead bringing joy into the person's experience. And even if they're not entirely receptive of it at first, I think there's something deep inside of them that is craving that. And you as the friend, if you can have the courage to be that for them, I think that is a gift far beyond the capacity of words. Thank you.
I'm sure that also helps the person start their own healing process with the grieving that's inevitably coming. So hopefully you gained some good information from today's show. Subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss a thing. Tune in next Friday. The topic is yoga for greater self-God realization. Robert's back. He's feeling good. He's able to talk about that topic. So we plugged it in for next Friday. In the meantime, we hope you have an enlightening week. Thank you for listening to the Sedona Soul Sisters Show. If you'd like more information about the Sedona Soul Sisters and their services, visit their website at SedonaSoulSisters.com. Subscribe to our show here so you don't miss a thing. All of us at Sedona Soul Sisters hope you have an enlightening week.